On the show today, the UN Security Council meets to discuss the Ukraine grain situation.
That by blocking exports and prompting a price increase by dropping out of this deal, you know, they're driving up prices, Russia is increasing its own profits on its own exports.
Plus, Poland mobilizes its troops closer to Belarus.
Wagner Group finally arrived in Belarus and were greeted there, and they started training with Belarusian forces right near Polish border.
And later in the program, Ukrainian women during wartime and a return to the stage for one of the most famous icons of Russian culture. Today is Friday, July 21st. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. As Russian artillery fell on Ukrainian agricultural infrastructure, shipping and storage facilities for a fourth straight night, the UN Security Council met Friday afternoon to discuss the recently dissolved Black Sea Grain Initiative, a possible global food shortage, and the situation on the ground in Ukraine. VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir was there.
Well, we heard a lot about the fact that how important this deal has been for the past year to stabilizing global food prices and food availability. And there were a lot of calls for it to be reinstated, for Russia to come back to the deal, and indeed for Russia to end the war. I think important things to point out about the deal: two-thirds of the grain, of the 33 million tons of grain exported under it, went to low and middle-income countries. Since it ended on Monday when Russia pulled out, the World Food Program says that wheat futures have risen by almost 9% and corn futures are up by 8%. And on Wednesday, the markets saw the single biggest increase in wheat prices since Russia's invasion began in February 2022. So it's a concerning development. And the UN aid chief said that some people will go hungry and some will starve as a result of this. And he said many will die as a result of these decisions. And he called for the restoration of the deal.
Did the Russian delegation have anything to say?
Indeed, their deputy ambassador is there. He's often their mouthpiece over their actual ambassador. He's very hardcore. He was quite stern. He said they weren't benefiting enough. And he said that now we are going to see anybody who's in the Black Sea as a military combatant, basically. He's repeated that stance that Moscow has made. And he said that they would consider any the countries that these ships are from to be complicit in the war on the side of Kyiv, if there are any ships, you know, how they're flagged from certain countries. And he said they weren't benefiting from the deal, but if they'll meet seven requirements that he listed, they would come back to the deal. But it's pretty obvious nobody's going to meet these seven requirements.
Did the meeting result in any actionable steps that countries or groups can take to solve the crisis, or was it just a meeting to discuss the problem?
Yeah, it was more to discuss. I mean, there's really not much the Security Council can do because Russia is a permanent member. They have a veto. In the past on this topic, they vetoed any resolutions that the Council has tried to do condemning the war. And that's why we've actually seen a lot of action on the situation in Ukraine move to the UN General Assembly, where nobody has a veto. And we've seen a condemnation and a call for end to the war and so on in the UN General Assembly, because really the Council's hands are tied. And I think actually one interesting fact that kept coming out over and over again in this meeting is really how much Russia has benefited from this deal, even though that they keep saying they haven't. And they also repeat the false claim that their food and fertilizer exports are sanctioned. They've never been sanctioned by the West. And in fact, the data shows that their food exports are significantly above pre-war levels. And several of the Western ambassadors pointed out that by blocking exports and prompting a price increase by dropping out of this deal, you know, they're driving up prices, Russia is increasing its own profits on its own exports. And what does that do? That means they have more money coming in to finance their war against Ukraine. So they're trying to play the victim and say they got a bad deal in this grain deal. But in fact, they're making money and it's going to fuel their war machine.
VOA's Margaret Bashir at the United Nations in New York. Margaret, thanks for your time. Thanks for your reporting today.
Thanks for having me.
In a related story, in the midst of attacks on Odessa's ports and the political turmoil over the grain deal, Ukrainian farmers are still busy harvesting their crops. Anna Kostachenko has more.
With 3 decades of farming experience, Ruslan Holub has cultivated valuable connections with prominent global traders. And even before Russia pulled out of a deal to allow Ukrainian grain shipments from Black Sea ports, he says Moscow purposely tried to delay those shipments.
I have spoken to many traders, and all of them said that Russian inspectors only created unnecessary queues. Many ships were simply on hold.
Ukraine has been working to establish new routes along the Danube River and land routes through Slovakia and Poland. But Holub says so far the Black Sea route remains the best.
The sea lets us save on logistics. This affects the on-site production cost for farmers.
Dutch farmer Kees Huizinga has been working in Ukraine for over 2 decades. He worries that he will lose his entire harvest if he cannot ship through the Black Sea routes.
All this wheat here behind me, we will lose. It's a pity, but if we can't export it, we can't eat it all ourselves. So Black Sea is really the only option to get this stuff out.
This year, Ukrainian farmers have seen a significant drop in grain prices. Holub says he and other farmers are selling their harvest for about $150 per ton, half the price of 2022.
Currently, we are on the verge of zero earnings or even losses. How can this be? Ukrainian farmers are hardworking by nature, and they understand we will eventually return to the levels of income we once had. But it is essential to continue planting, despite the current challenges.
Ukrainians are counting on international partners like Turkey and the UN to ensure their grain exports on the Black Sea. Pavlo Lakichuk is from the Center for Global Studies.
If necessary, under the auspices of the UN, Turkey can ensure the security of the grain corridor without Russia. The essence of this proposal lies in the fact that ships moving towards our ports and in the Black Sea Straits fly various flags from Togo to Turkey. Therefore, any attack by Russia on any ship would be considered an act of piracy.
After withdrawing from the grain deal, Russia started shelling Ukrainian grain storage facilities. President Zelensky says bolstering air defense system at Ukrainian ports like Odessa could help mitigate threats and maintain stable global food prices. Anna Kostyuchenko for VOA News, Kyiv region, Ukraine.
Poland has decided to redeploy some of its military from the west to the east of the country because of the possible threats related to the Wagner Group's presence in Belarus. This prompted a swift and strong reaction from Russian President Vladimir Putin, who accused Poland of having territorial ambitions in the former Soviet Union and said that any aggression against Belarus would be considered aggression against Russia. For more, I'm joined by VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze.
In the last couple of days, we learned that Wagner Group finally arrived in Belarus and were greeted there, and they started training with Belarusian forces right near Polish border in Brest. So Poland felt it's a threat, and they say the officials in Poland say it's a provocation. The committee of Council of Ministers of, for National Security met on Wednesday, and they made a decision to move some of the troops to that area. Obviously, the Poland have been under threats or feel the Ukrainian war, Russian war in Ukraine, very close. So this is actually additional threats for Poland as a country.
Is this a real threat though, or is Poland just posturing?
It's hard to say. They want to be protected. Obviously, it's more a political move, probably than military needs. However, the Polish Minister of Defense say this is important to protect Polish border and basically NATO border.
Vladimir Putin has said that an attack on Belarus would be considered an attack on Russia itself. Is there any indication that anybody is planning on attacking Belarus?
Obviously, nobody, NATO is not a threat to Russia, and NATO is not a threat to Belarus. Ukraine wants to be in NATO. Nobody is planning to attack Russia, but Russia is making this statement, and they were making these statements before they invaded Ukraine. So it's a very similar playbook that Russia plays. That's why Poland is on alert.
Mirosława Gongadze is VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief. We reached her in Warsaw. Mirosława, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for your analysis this morning.
Thank you very much.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has dismissed Ukraine's ambassador to the UK. For some background, I'm joined by Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
This comes right after the NATO summit, where sarcastic situation happened. Ben Wallace, the Minister of Defense of the UK, he made a comment about the fact that Ukraine should be more thankful for the partners, for the support that allies are giving to Ukraine. And President Zelensky, in return, made another sarcastic comment saying that, Ukraine is quite thankful, but if Mr. Wallace has any ideas, we can discuss how more thankful Ukraine can be, and even every morning Ukraine can thank the UK. This was, it's not the direct speech, but this was, the idea of the conversation. And then Mr. Pristaiko, the ambassador of Ukraine to the UK, made a comment on this and said that this sounded quite an unhealthy sarcasm from President Zelensky. And basically after that, it came the decision of him to be removed from the position of ambassador.
So Prosecco told Zelensky, who is a comedian, that he doesn't understand sarcasm.
Kind of, yeah. That he basically, it was too much. And that it was unhealthy. This is a direct speech. He called it unhealthy sarcasm. And basically, he criticized, right, you're correct. He criticized this behavior.
Now, it also shows how President Zelensky manages his staff, manages his administration. He's received some criticism in the past for being quite ruthless, hasn't he?
Well, a lot of people saying that he's quite strict, and that he doesn't like a lot of criticism, he's the kind of a person. So he's not. We should consider that he is not only a comedian, but he is also a businessman, and he is quite strict in his business. And according to what people are telling who work with him, that he is quite a strict person himself, and this is how he rules his business and how he rules the country right now. So, this is something that this is a fact which is not a secret.
So let's change gears and talk a bit about something different now. The next segment we'll air on the show is actually a package that you put together about the lives of women during the war in Ukraine, in Kyiv. Can you give us a little preview? What are we going to hear?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that the most important to understand that we usually talk with you about war and about frontline, about battles, about equipment and military equipment and all this kind of stuff. And of course, this is what the most important when we talk about the war. But another very important topic is the consequence of this war, not only in military perspective, but in social and in social and psychological perspective. Here in Ukraine, you can see it very clearly, especially when you look at the destiny of women psychologically. it's extremely difficult for women to live through this, and unfortunately this problem is getting worse, it's getting bigger, and it's gonna be getting bigger in the future. And this particular story is about one woman. She lost her husband at war. He was a soldier, and she went through tortures from Russian military. And this is a story about how her life has transformed and how she found strength to live on. And this is not, and this is a particular story about one woman, but basically you can say that a lot of women in Ukraine are going through this.
And we'll hear that story coming up in just a few seconds. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
And now let's hear that story we were just talking about with Anna. Tens of thousands of Ukrainian women are serving alongside men in the military, both in combat and non-combat roles against Russian aggression. Meanwhile, other women are facing mental and physical pressures as they work behind the front lines to care for families and rebuild their lives. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv has the story of one woman's transformation.
Svetlana Kosolapova is now alone after her husband, a Ukrainian soldier, died in battle. Before Russia's full-scale invasion, she says she had a happy life filled with plans, including a family vacation.
We were happily married for 15 years. Everything was taken away from me in one day. I had a future. We had tickets to the Carpathian Mountains for April.
Then came February of 2022, when Russian forces occupied her town in the Luhansk region. Kosolapova says that's when life for her and her two children became an unending nightmare.
Even after the death of my husband, the Russians were still coming. Took me for interrogations, took me away, locked up the children, they took away food.
The mental torture left Kosolapova with no choice but to flee. Along with two children and no place to go, she says all she could think of was survival. As tens of thousands of Ukrainian women serve alongside men in both combat and non-combat roles against Russia, women like Kosolapova, who stayed behind, are fighting their own emotional and physical battles. She received help from the Masha Fund, an organization that helps women and children whose lives have been ravaged by the war and abuse. Co-founder Maria Yefresinina says the challenges women now face are completely new. When the women come in, she says they are often in despair.
They don't have a thirst for life. They don't understand why to live. This is exactly what the enemy has done to us. He did not only physically kill the women, but he killed them psychologically.
Kosolapova went through mental rehab. Gradually, after regaining her own strengths, she was able to start helping others. Now she works in the group psychology unit, helping children with autism spectrum disorders.
I'm now at the point when I can help, not just accept help, I can give it away as well.
Like many of Ukraine's women, Kosolapova has had to accept that her past life is gone. She is working to get through the present and hoping to build a future that, although different from what she had before, will be better. Anna Chernikova for VOA News, Kyiv.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. More than 1,000 kilometers from the front line, the city of Lviv, Ukraine, is still vulnerable to Russian missile strikes. A mother, father, and five children who survived a July 6th strike on a Lviv apartment complex share their tale. Omlyan Oshudlyak has their story.
Hours after a Russian missile attack, July 6th, in the city of Lviv, Ukraine, Igor Kiselevich managed to escape the chaos, along with his wife and their five children.
The first missile hit happened, explosions, then the second, the fatal one. Had we been walking through the courtyard then, we would have been dead now, just like the cars here.
closed-circuit television cameras in the building courtyard and cameras 1 kilometer away from the epicenter captured the strikes that caused the death of 10 people.
One of the boys started yelling, "We must survive, we must survive." Children were crying and shrieking.
Of Ihor and Mirka's children, 15-year-old Yarema is the oldest and 1-year-old Miroslav is the youngest, born during the war.
The stairwell passage was blocked. Everyone wanted to get out. People panicked. Someone was injured. We squeezed through with the kids. I took one of my brothers and got to the courtyard, which was filled with bricks, beams, and metal debris. All the cars were damaged, covered in dust. A soldier shouted that another missile was coming and that we needed to run.
I was in my pajamas and took mom's green sweater from the hallway. We left the house and I noticed a piece of the neighboring green building was missing.
Once outside, the family heard the third explosion. They lay on the grass and waited. None of them were injured, but the shockwaves and debris damaged the family car. Still, they are determined to stay in Ukraine despite the war.
My kids know very well that these missiles came from Russia. They know the name of the Russian president. I don't hide it. They know they're being destroyed because they're Ukrainian. They talk about it at school, at home, and in church. We don't use tender, affectionate, childish language for this war.
By staying here, we're proving to ourselves that we believe in our country and in our children's future.
According to Lviv City Council, dozens of private residences were affected by the missile attack in the UNESCO buffer zone near the historic city center. Amaliano Shudlak for VOA News, Lviv, Ukraine.
And finally today, I leave you with a bit of good news coming from Russia. Moscow's world-famous Bolshoi Ballet, grounded by COVID-19 and then shunned in the West since Russia's military campaign in Ukraine, returns to international touring next week for the first time since the pandemic with a trip to Beijing. Its dancers hope this will herald a return to the global stage for the crown jewel of Russian culture, which toured the world even in the most tense days of the Cold War.
I don't think it's a secret that China is one of the few countries that support and continue to cooperate with us.
That's the ballet's artistic director, Makar Vaziev.
I believe that we will perform again in the West, and others will come to Russia to perform. It's necessary and priceless. And as I said before, Bolshoi Theater Ballet is recognized the world over.
The theater, founded in 1776 by Empress Catherine the Great, will showcase excerpts from some of its best-known ballet works in 2 gala performances in Beijing, followed by a 3-day staging of the 19th-century ballet Don Quixote. In February of 2022, the day after Moscow sent troops into Ukraine, London's Royal Opera House called off the Bolshoi's planned post-pandemic return for a residency scheduled for that summer. Cancellations followed in other Western cities, too. Vladimir Urin, the Bolshoi's director, said in April that he was saddened by the loss of what had been regular creative cooperation with Western theater companies and artists. The Bolshoi has not been without controversy. An Italian principal dancer quit the company and left Russia shortly after the Ukraine war began, and the theater this year canceled 2 shows by directors who had spoken out against the conflict. And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.